Blog Talk Radio.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down.
Something while we were talking a while back, an idea that you brought up, and you know, I just grabbed it from you and ran with it. It was like, you know, watching one of those awesome plays at the end of a football game where they fake people out.
Hey, I want to make sure I let you know. Hi, Weaver. How are you tonight? I brought Kate on, so she's with us.
Oh, great. Hey, Kate. How's it going?
It's wonderful, thank you. Hello to both of you. I'm looking forward to this evening show.
Yes. Me too. But yeah, the concept for tonight's show is actually quite simple, and to make for a wonderful night of poetry, we ran a contest asking people to write to their favorite poem, classic poem, and for every entry that is getting read on the show, we're going to have the classic poem read before it. And so with the amount of entries that we have, we will be doing more than likely, there's a good 90% or more chance that this will be a two-part show with part two continuing next week.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that one, for sure.
Yep, me too. Yep, because I believe we have right around 36 or so on the board counting classic poems.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. And half of that is really a full show to begin with, so we're good.
Oh, definitely. We are really good. quality and quantity.
Exactly.
That is for sure. And another great thing is that because we have a full night of classic poetry, there was no need for me to go hunt down a specific classic poem that fit with the theme, because they were already chosen for us.
Amen.
There you go.
Excellent. Sounds like it's going to be a good night. So, So anyhow, whenever you're ready, however you want to do this, wherever you want to start, just let me know, and I'll behave myself and do what I'm supposed to. As best I can, anyway. Yeah, problem.
All right. Sounds like a good idea to me. All right. Well, we will start with a classic poem, which is The Road Not Taken by I should remember this, Robert Frost. Yes, I had to click on the link before I actually could remember the name, I know. And we have an audio for that.
Okay, here we go. Let me put that on.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
That is always an amazing classic poem, you know. It does not surprise me that somebody chose that one. And that recording was actually done by Robert Frost himself.
Yep.
So very cool to hear his voice.
Absolutely. It's a great poem.
Absolutely. And inspired by that poem, we have Yes, There Are Two Paths by J.A. Nice. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will. Just give me a moment till I refresh. See if it's going to pop up. Oh, yes. There we are. Okay, so we have Yes, There Are Two Paths by J.A. Nice. This is not the first crossroad, nor fork I've encountered on my journey through this world. No, I've stood right here before, wondering which is the best way forward, considering diverging paths, at times even thinking of turning back. To the west lies the setting sun and a wide path well travelled. My spirit cries for me to move along, yet I stand long because I have to be sure. The path chosen makes yours, and truly there's no time to change the road you own. A path through a dark wood, narrow and dim, may lead to a bright meadow around the bend. Then another road just over the hill leads to another and onward still. I have learned you must choose wisely, my friend, for the road will not bring you this way again. End poem.
Great read there, Kate, and a wonderful write by J.A. Nice. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was just a really well-done poem, and I think it's so funny because Robert Frost's poem is a classic, you know, and it's written in an older time in different words. I mean, you read this one against it, this is so modern day comparatively, but it's very well done, and it makes the point that needs to be made. You know, the path through a dark wood, narrow and dim, may lead to a bright meadow around a bend. Then another road just over the hill leads to another and onward still. I have learned you must choose wisely, my friend, for the road will not bring you this way again. It's the truth. Every path we take in life takes us in a direction, and it's, you know, looping around. You know, we years fade away as we keep moving forward, and you can't get back to where you started, you know. So I think it was just wonderfully done. So great job, J.A. Nice, and thank you so much for sharing. Wonderful piece.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have to agree. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Kate, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. Yes, I thought this was incredibly well written. As you say, even putting it against the original, this was succinct. It was neat. It was well written. It was very well done. And it is, again, as everybody said so far, the thought was there, and you knew exactly what they meant. You can't judge a book by its cover, and you can't judge a path by its traveled or not mm-hmm. traveled. So, it is. It's great, the thought that you could go along a narrow, dim path and then suddenly find yourself in a bright meadow, because that would be the very best of things, wouldn't it? And yes, another hill leads on to another. And again, you have a vista ahead of you that you don't know what's going to come to you when you get past that hill. I think it's great. I really thought it was well written. And thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really liked this one. I like how it has the spirit of the chosen poem by Robert Frost, and yet, as Jean was mentioning, it has a more modern feel to it. And what I really like is that she reminds us of how we don't come to those crossroads just once in life. There will be over and over again opportunities to come up to crossroads, and as we come to more of them, we start to learn how to step back, pause, and really reflect on the pros and cons of our decisions. Wonderful lines all the way through, but I have to say it's that the contemplative lines of the second stanza which really get my attention, and I especially like the path chosen makes it yours, and truly there is no time to change the road you own. So excellent write and very well done. All right.
Hey, Dan, listen, I want to apologize to Jay, and I, there was an audio on this piece, and I did not see it. Otherwise, I would have taken it.
Oh, shoot.
So I apologize.
I never even saw that.
It's little. It's really little in the IN, and I just thought when you were talking there, I'm going, oh, man. So I apologize.
Oh, okay.
But it was a wonderful poem. Thank you for sharing. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. It absolutely was a beautiful poem.
And you did a wonderful job reading it, Kate. So. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the next classic poem we're going to go to is Christmas Greetings by Lewis Carroll. And we have an audio for that.
Uh-oh. I think I got this. Yeah, I had it. Oh, okay. Oh, here it is. Thank you.
Hearing that poem put to music. Very cool. And?
Very good. And listen, before you assign that next read, we have Laurent joining us. So let's stop that line. Hello, Laurent. And welcome aboard.
Hi, Laurent.
Hey, I'm almost back. Hang on.
It sounds like you're connected.
Hi.
I'm glad you could join us.
I've been disconnected for many years. So. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. You said I think he's connected now, so we're good. Hello.
Howdy.
Hello. Glad you could join us.
I woke up from my nap just a wee bit late. I apologize.
Oh, no worries. Sometimes we need that wee little extra napping.
We'll send you a bill later. It's okay. Oh, good.
I won't pay it as usual.
Yep. So, inspired by that classic poem, we have Mistletoe Kisses by Betty Page. And I think our own Christmas queen, Fill My Eyes, should read this poem.
Oh, I hope you get two shirts on Christmas week now. Okay. In fact, I'm going to set that up for you. Oh, Mistletoe Kisses by Betty Page. Chase me around the tree, decorating ornaments, swirled colorful lights. Laughing and singing, dancing round in our bedroom, serenades and sweet. Playing your guitar as we cuddle by the fire, making chocolate s'mores. Wrapped up in flannels, popping open pink champagne while we watch Netflix. Munching on our snacks, Christmas cookies and candy, gourmet chocolate. Whipped cream, strawberries, twirling cherries around my tongue. Love seducing you. as our eyes engage, I pull out some mistletoe, kissing you wildly, so passionately as we wrestle playfully, enjoying pleasure, making love past dawn. Soon I cook you some breakfast, then we play some more. End poem. Will you tell the frogs it's Christmas time? My goodness.
What the heck is that?
They're the frogs. They're my friends, the frogs, but they don't know it's Christmas right now. So they're chirping up a
storm. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, great read there, Jean.
Thank you.
And you got the frogs singing along with you. Oh, funny. And I was going to start muting people. That wouldn't have done any good.
No.
Great read and a wonderful, wonderful write by Betty. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about the frogs. I hope those weren't my frogs that you're talking about.
They were. They were your frogs. We heard them.
They were? Okay, I wasn't sure. I told them to shut up and just be quiet, so we'll see what happens.
All you had to do was tell them
loves that's right. Well, you know, it's my Christmas present. They're going to shut up. You got to like mistletoe kisses regardless of the time of year. I do remember this, and I love her avatar. Looking good to me. There's something about cuddling by the fire, taking chocolate snores, wrapped up in flannels, and there's nobody around, just the two of you guys opening pink champagne. I love that. Gotta love the poem. Nicely done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Well, beautifully written. I'd like to know what Thomas Moore's are. I have no idea what they are. I'm sure they must be nice. Are they something you eat? Like Thomas Moore's? Are they something more? Sounds lovely. No, this was beautifully written, and it was just perfect for Christmas, wasn't it? Wrapped up in flannels, popping open pink champagne while you watch Netflix. That's perfect. That frog agrees with me. I like it so much. Munching on our snacks, Christmas cookies and candies and gourmet chocolates. Oh, that's what Christmas is about, getting sick. I love it. Perfect time of the year. Ah, dear. Yes, well done, Betty. That was one of your really sweetest ones I've heard for a while. So thank you for sharing.
Oh, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I said this was, a great piece by Betty. It was playful and it was fun. And, I just thought it was loving and a wonderful scenario or story, scene, picture painted, how would I say it, of a great Christmas Eve and a Christmas Day and, you know, just enjoying each other in that time for that holiday. So, I think it was just a really well done piece and a nice take on that prompt. Nice job, Betty. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. This is wonderful. It's beautiful. It's delightful. Great imagery. Wonderful 575 lines. I like how she brings us into a Christmas that is playful and sensual. And reminds us that, you know, Christmas doesn't have to have big gatherings in order to be special. You know, I really liked this all the way through, but it's really a treat for all the senses with bringing in the foods like the Christmas cookies and candies, gourmet chocolates, and all the fun extracurricular activities. I really just thought this was wonderful. I especially like the seduction, the lines, whipped cream, strawberries, twirling cherries round my tongue, love seducing you. Wonderful lines and very well done. And let's see what we have next. All right. The next classic poem we have is Stanion Street by Rod McEwen. And we have an audio for that whenever you're ready, Jean.
Yes, we do. And here we go. We're going to Stanion Street.
You lie bent up in embryo sleep, below the painting of the blue fisherman, without a pillow, the checkered cover kicked and tangled on the floor, the old house creaking now, a car going by, the wind, a fire engine up the hill. I've disentangled myself from you, moved silently, groping in the dark for cigarettes. Now, three cigarettes later, still elated, still afraid, I sit across the room watching you, the light from the street lamp coming through the shutters. Hysterical patterns flash on the walls sometimes when a car goes by. Otherwise, there is no change. Not in the way you lie curled up. Not in the sounds that never come from you. Not in the discontent I feel. You have filled completely this first November day with Sausalito and sign language. Tenu and coffee. Ice cream and your wide eyes. Now unable to sleep because the day is finally going home. Because your sleep has locked me out. I watch you. And I wonder at you. I know your face by touch when it's dark. I know the profile of your sleeping face. The sound of you sleeping. Sometimes I think you are all sound. Kicking free of covers and adjusting shutters. Moving about in the bathroom. Taking 20 minutes of our precious time. I know the hills and gullies of your body. Curves, turns. I have total recall of you in Stanion Street. Because I know it will be important later. It's quiet now. Only the clock, moving toward rejection tomorrow, breaks the stillness. There are golden apples to be picked, and green hills to climb, meadows to run when you're young. There are roaring rivers to be crossed, bridges to build, wild oats to sow as you grow. But later, on the other side of time, the apples no longer taste sweet. Bridges fall down, meadows turn brown, as life falls apart in a little room on Stanion
That is a wonderful classic poem, a very provocative. And actually, Rod McEwen is a classic poet I had not read before. So I do have to say thank you to Liquid Mind Forever for sharing him, to introducing me to him. So very cool. And inspired by that particular classic poem, we have A Sudden Stopping of Time by Liquid Mind Forever. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
Be happy to. A Sudden Stopping of Time. I watch and I wonder, did God create you just for me? And I wonder, I wander, pondering the curves and gullies of your body, inviting me, turning into deep rivers of sleep. And oh, how they do excite the architectural appetite of wide open genius, the Frank Lloyd Wright within me. The capture and silence of the rapture to such magnitude, your salmon sunburnt glow comes to know, and like the taste of peppermint toothpaste, and all those playful little girl giggles of those first tempestuous teasing. We kiss and squeeze, standing wild and free, blooms of sea spray. But here, sequestered, alone beside your sleep, I hear those demons of doubt creep in into our bed, where I now play, 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 in your snug and warm, outstretched in your massive array of hair, more and more alive for each silently stolen nosedive, secretly breathing in your wind-blown, salt-sprayed bodies, and pistachio ice cream breath, all matted together inside your voices, side by side, along with thoughts of whether or not to pack a picnic or a parka just in case Oregon's coastal weather blows rough and woolly. But somehow, I know we'll stay here, inside your California golden glow, tucked inside your warm, feisty thighs, a wide-eyed beauty, enmeshed in this timeless crash of passion, which somehow you've allowed me to imagine for one more hour on this F-stop summer's day, on this requiem mass night, where I lie silent, contrite, and wonder as I wander on in tiptoe silence, draped, clovered in your bronzed skin and funky smell of afterwards. End poems.
Wonderful read there, Laurent, and a beautiful write by Liquid Mind Forever. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, yes, this was very well written. Really lovely. I did enjoy it. It was a sudden stopping of time. And I like that first stanza. It really is quite, I think the word is delightful. I watch and I wonder, did God create you just for me? And as I wonder, pondering the curves and gullies of your body, inviting me, turning into deep rivers of sleep. That's really nice. Yeah, and it just goes on from there. It's just beautiful. Yeah. It seems a little bit sad as well sometimes, but it's attempted. It just teases and kisses and squeezes. So it should be incredibly happy, but for some reason I get just a little bit of, I don't know, sadness, or maybe not quite as connected as she wants to be. But I really enjoyed it anyway. I thought it was very well written. Thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
So the rest of us can hear you.
Are you on mute, Jean?
What, you want to hear me? Come on now. Serious. I thought this was just a wonderful piece by Deborah. I thought there was many great stanzas and lines throughout, and it was an excellent reflection of that chosen prompt, I thought. I too liked the intro to this piece very much, and there was so much more below that, you know. It was just fabulous. So I think it's probably one of my favorite pieces that I've heard from Deborah. You know, and I've heard some good ones. but I really like the way this one just hit me. It was great. So thank you, Deborah, for sharing with us. This is wonderful. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Lawrence, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
I was never a big Rod McKeown fan, but if it inspired this poem by Liquid Mind Forever, then bravo, Rod, because this is a great piece. I'm with Jean. Mm-hmm. Could be one of my favorite pieces by her. It's not so abstract as could be difficult to understand, but it does everything a poem like this should do. It's edgy, but it's romantic. It's mm-hmm. passionate. It's descriptive. Yeah. Metaphors work. Language is soft where it needs to be soft. A little sharp where it needs to be sharp. Mm-hmm. I don't know about sadness, as Kate said. It may seem a little sad. I think it's probably more reflective, which can mm-hmm. sometimes be confused with sad. But no, bravo. A great poem here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I could see that reflective. I really like how she's captured the spirit and the essence of the poem, the classic poem, but with her own unique phrasing and wordplay. I like the reference to the old-fashioned cameras, this f-stopped summer's day on this reclaimed mass night where I lie silent, contrite. You know, nice rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery and metaphors. It has such a sense of romanticism and sensuality, and not just the sensuality, but the whole idea of living in the moment, you know, of being vulnerable to each other. I really liked the clever reference to Frank Lloyd Wright, and oh, how they do excite me, the architectural appetite of wide-open genius, the Frank Lloyd Wright within me, the capture and silence of the rapture to such magnitude. There's such a wonderful sense of reverence for someone who's laying next to you. You know, wonderful lines all the way through and very well done. And the next classic poem I'm going to put up is Eight Count by Charles Bukowski. And we have a recording for that.
Okie dokie. Here we go.
As I walked out in the streets of Laredo, as I walked out in Laredo one day,
I
spied...
Whoop. Aw, come on.
What happened?
Hang on a second.
Okay.
I'm hoping I'm mislabeled.
As I walked out in the street.
I got to get that one, Pam. Want to do something else first?
Sure, no problem. No problem. All right, let me find something else here. All right, I tell you what, we'll just go for The Wasteland, Part 1 by T.S. Eliot.
Okay, I can do that. Well, I said that until I hit the button. The Wasteland. Here we go.
April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in forgetful snow, feeding a little life with dried tubers. Summer surprised us, coming over the Starnberger See with a shower of rain. We stopped in the colonnade and went on in sunlight into the Hofgarten and drank coffee and talked for an hour. Bin gar keiner Prussin, stamm aus Litauen, echt Deutsch. And when we were children, staying at the Archduke's, my cousin's, he took me out on a sled, and I was frightened. He said, Marie, Marie, hold on tight. And down we went. In the mountains, there you feel free. I read much of the night and go south in the winter. What are the roots that clutch? What branches grow out of this stony rubbish? Son of man, you cannot say or guess, for you know only a heap of broken images where the sun beats and the dead tree gives no shelter, the cricket no relief, and the dry stone no sound of water. Only there is shadow under this red rock. Come in under the shadow of this red rock, and I will show you something different from either your shadow at morning striding behind you or your shadow at evening rising to meet you. I will show you fear in a handful of dust. Frisch weht der Wind der Heimat zu. Mein irisch Kind, wo weilest du? You gave me hyacinths first a year ago. They called me the hyacinth girl. Yet when we came back late from the hyacinth garden, your arms full and your hair wet, I could not speak and my eyes failed. I was neither living nor dead, and I knew nothing, looking into the heart of light, the silence. Erd und leer das Meer. Madame Sosostris, famous clairvoyant, had a bad cold. Nevertheless, is known to be the wisest woman in Europe with a wicked pack of cards. Here, said she, is your card, the drowned Phoenician sailor. Those are pearls that where his eyes look. Here is Belladonna, the lady of the rocks, the lady of situations. Here is the man with three staves, and here the wheel. And here is the one-eyed merchant, and this card, which is blank, is something he carries on his back, which I am forbidden to see. I do not find the hanged man, fear death by water. I see crowds of people walking round in a ring. Thank you. If you see dear Mrs. Equitone, tell her I bring the horoscope myself. One must be so careful these days. Unreal city. Under the brown fog of a winter dawn, a crowd flowed over London Bridge, so many I had not thought death had undone so many. Sighs, short and infrequent, were exhaled, and each man fixed his eyes before his feet, flowed up the hill and down King William Street to where St. Mary Woolnoth kept the hours with a dead sound on the final stroke of nine. There I saw one I knew and stopped him, crying, Stetson, you who were with me in the ships at Miley, that corpse you planted last year in your garden, has it begun to sprout? Will it bloom this year? Or has the sudden frost disturbed its bed? Oh, keep the dog far hence that's friend to men, or with his nails he'll dig it up again. You, hypocrite lecteur, mon semblable, mon frère.
A wonderful audio of part one of The Wasteland. And the reason I went with part one instead of the whole poem, and most people who know The Wasteland will know this, that the actual poem in its entirety is a 26-minute read. And while I was really glad to see that somebody was inspired by that particular classic poem, as it is one of the, I think, most epic and thought-provoking poems in modernism, history of poetry, it was just a little too much. So I thought, you know what, let's just go with part one. And if there happens to be anybody out there who has not read The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot, they can go ahead and they can, check the rest out, at their leisure. So there we go. And inspired by that classic poem, we have The Dog Said, Cover Them in Ashes by Time Teller. and it goes like this. Half admiring, a rambling rector rose outside a window. A grand master knocks over his opponent's king, mate in two, he divulged, turns looking at the picture of Odysseus, men scoffing the cows that Zeus held sacred, Tiresias, you cannot presume to be so deluded as to think there's no counter-argument to your sweet and polite aggression. My king is wounded, but not mated in two, for his queen in all her shining armor has visited Margate, and so he rests assuredly in recovery. This toing and throwing of a mind, a circle of certainty, one or the other, Tiresias has become vogue. Quite rightly, we all walk a line, a spectrum of light and truth that plays the play in surrealism and understanding of each other's gambits, fashionable stages, and the man invented surrealism to justify a play, as did Dickens lend a name originally. Motif, a short human life. Repetitive motifs, a short human civilization. And the lizards and the chameleons will be punished for bringing shortness, and the tricksters will be ever present in burying our dead, as if magic evolves to religion, leaving science to be mother and say, lift up the body and fling the mush upon it. Alas, grandmaster, you're too speedy. Assertions have you embarrassed by life, and now you are becoming the fisher king. Take the queen by all means, rook to checkmate. Will you reincarnate, leave only the dean's curse another game, or shall we retire to the garden? There is no escape from the ruins of rumor and misconception, desolation of past mistakes, the coming of their flawed visions. I have never visited Margate or spoken to Ezra Pound, neither transformed under the wrath of gods and their many stories. Yet we know, don't we, the barrenness of a place where self-reflection strips bare the trees, roses, hedge grows, and green fields to leave only a curse. This motif was longer, yet the gatherers of stories stripped it of its masquerade, colluded the preface to reinvent motifs. The only impostors should endure, and Margate is warmer these days. The sand rubs flesh, so many grains fitting together. A barman phones and they come running. Sailors and the knights of the round tables play with romantic notions of growth and journeys. Yet their grail is forever searched. Mantras protect us, and the golden boughs of outdated certainty symbolize the coming napalm of self, and the West rebuilds things in its own image, including. So, Grandmaster, you are rebuilding the game, yet the outcome will be the same. Some fucked up, bitter, hard work that the gods for you treat others the same as they were. What's done to us, we do to them. And so you are blinded, transformed as if selling England and the Venetian merchants require their pound of flesh. That's the business of a circle, a round table. And their bitter artists flunk their views like narcissistic suns and moons, give the ideas of rebirth. Who's to say you're not right? It could have been mate in two, if it were not for the fact I kept you in the dark, and the wasteland of your curse has become a worn groove of self-pity, comfortable living, where fishing might be the only thing left for you to try. End poem. And what an absolutely amazing, amazing write by Time Teller. And Laurent, I'd like to hear your thoughts, please.
I'm thinking that in this particular case, poem by Time Teller was of a quality that I think approaches Eliot. It's a remarkable piece, this centered around a chess game that seems to somehow reflect the vicissitudes of life, the abstract realism employed, the descriptions, the metaphors, the small things. I was wondering what to pick out and read, but it's all so absolutely. My king is wounded, but not mated in two, for his queen in all her shining armor has visited Margate, and so he rests assured in recovery, this toing and throwing of a mind, a circle of certainty, one or the other. Tircius has become vogue. It's really a remarkable piece. The language is, it really approaches Eliot as far as I'm concerned. It's extremely well done.
I totally agree. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I have to agree with Laurent wholeheartedly. I mean, I thought that this was, the thoughts were so well penned throughout. And I love the chess references all through the piece as well. And yeah, the part that Laurent quoted was like the one I was looking at, like, yep, I like that there. And I just thought it was a wonderful take on the chosen prompt, and I really enjoyed it. So well done, Time Teller, and thanks for sharing. Really enjoyed it. Absolutely.
Absolutely, I have to agree. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, yes, definitely. This was beautifully written. There was a confidence to it that I enjoyed so much. There was no hesitation. Time Teller knew what he wanted to say, what he wanted to write. And I thought, so many fabulous stanzas. But my favorite, yeah, quite rightly, we all walk a line. A spectrum of light and truth that plays the play in surrealism and understanding of each other's gambits. I like that. So basically it's a case of we all get to know each other. We know what makes each other tick and what each person will do. As opposed if you play chess with somebody a lot, you would get to know their likes and dislikes as far as gambits and positioning would come up. So I think, yeah, I think it's very well done. I really enjoyed it. A lot to it, but as I said, very confidently and very well written. So thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. Yeah, I really like the way he met the prompt, his chosen prompt head on. I like the extended metaphor for the chess game and the idea of the representation of a global takeover. And the idea of the higher power of the gods who play games with mortals, or even the idea of people with higher power that play games with other people's lives. It's quite an intelligent and thought-provoking piece. And I really liked the motif was longer, yet the gatherers of stories stripped it of its masquerade. And the sand rubs flesh, so many grains fitting together. A barman phones, and they come running. Wonderful lines all the way through. Powerful write and very well done.
Absolutely.
I see Stelina on the board. Hello, Stelina. Good to see you. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So the next classic poem I'm going to put up is Eight Count by Charles Bukowski, and we have an audio for that.
All right. Yes, we do this time. Yes, we do.
From my bed, I watch three birds on a telephone wire. One flies off, then another. One is left, then it too is gone. My typewriter is tombstone still, and I am reduced to birdwatching. Just thought I'd let you know, fucker.
Wonderful read there by our very own Intimidus Rex. And I have to say thank you to Rex for recording that poem for us, since I wasn't able to find one on YouTube. He did a wonderful job with that, and very cool. All right, so up next we have, inspired by that classic poem, And Counting by Marriott Dark. And Kate, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course, happy to. And Counting by Marriott Dark. My head is coursing. I'm watching crows create their masterpieces across my headspace. Eyes that see everything, plotting my downfall. I used to use a typewriter until it became an unwieldy millstone around my neck. Now I write in a stuttering voice with one finger. It's a hell of a thing, though, being such a willful fucker. End poem.
Great read there, Kate. I liked this write. It was a strong write, strong imagery and metaphors. I liked the wordplay. It had with the creating the word downfall, falling downward physically. I like how it speaks on the idea of changing, a changing body, with the idea of, you know, having something almost wrong with yourself physically, and still being determined to go on writing. But I think it also speaks on the idea of changing times, because it mentions I used to use a typewriter until it became an unwieldy millstone around my neck, and now I write in a stuttering voice with one finger. So you think of the idea that there could be a physical problem, but you also think of the idea that the one finger typing represents the idea that everything is now done on like a cell phone. And, you know, definitely where there's a will, there's a way. So excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I really like this. I thought it was a great reflection of the original chosen prompt. That there was just enough of the original poem floating around in my brain. I did it again. Oh, no, I didn't do it again. I heard something. I thought maybe I was on mute. I thought that there was just enough of that floating around in my mind that when this was read, I could kind of feel the parallel, sense that parallel in pieces, not in wording and not in idea, just in the kind of thought. And I thought it was clever. It was very clever, you know. And then it's a hell of a thing, though, being such a willful fucker. You know, like, no matter what, I'm still going to do it, even if I do have to type with one finger, you know, on this little contraption. And I thought it was good. I really did. I thought it was very clever and nicely written, put together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
This is another case where the response to the prompts is better than the prompt, I thought. I thought that Bukowski, who I really liked, kind of threw that other poem away. There wasn't much of anything there, as far as I was concerned. It's kind of a throwaway line, yet Marriott Dark took that and really did it one better. And not only that, used the typewriter. Until I used to use a typewriter until it became an unwieldy millstone around my neck. And that's right. That's what a typewriter is. It could be a boat anchor at times. An unwieldy millstone around my neck and other times. It's something that we are tied to. The phone is something that slipped into our pocket. It's small. It's easily carried. And it is allowing him, one stuttering voice at a time, to write, which is great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, great comment. And Kate, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
It was very enjoyable to read. I really did. I had fun with this. But yes, I also like the throwaway downfall and down you go. dub, dub, dub. I liked that a lot. And then I used to use a typewriter until it became unwieldy, as we all know what fun they used to be. Oh, my goodness. But I did like the way, the stanza I particularly liked was the way he kind of rewrote the, you know, they say that you type sort of like you peck with a finger when you type. But he's changed that now to something that I think is far better. Now I write in a stuttering voice with one finger. I thought that was beautifully done. I really enjoyed that. Because that would be what it was like if you were pick one letter at a time. It's like a stuttering voice. Well, yeah, very clever. And even if you are a wolf talker, I thought it was well done. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment there. And you got me to thinking, because, yeah, it would be like typing with one finger. It would be like also a reading a siren voice, but it made me think of the whole idea. It's also almost like how you would expect someone to possibly type and talk if they had had a stroke with the stuttering voice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's definitely different ways that you could take that. So I like that. Very cool comment.
Well, and I tell you guys were talking, and I looked up and I said, wait a minute, because the eighth and counting by Myriad Dark. I like the title. The title struck me funny when I saw that.
Yes.
Yeah. To kind of look at them together.
That was clever. That was clever, yes. The title. Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Very cool. Very cool. Well, the next audio I'm going to have you play for us, Jean, is a bit of the compilation of poetry by Charles Baudelaire.
Okay. Well, let's see now. Figure out where I put it. It's down here. No, it's not. Hang on, I'm getting there. No. Oh, you gonna sing, Laura?
What?
I did it on purpose.
Oh, should we start singing while you look for it on that big long list?
Okay. Yes. I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm not going to sing, but I am going to take time to say thank you to everyone who wrote for this show, and thank you to Kate and Lawrence, and, you know, thank you to Stelina and Bill on the board. Definitely really appreciate you all. This has just been an amazing night of poetry so far, and we've still got some more good, great stuff coming up. And do you still need singing, Jean, or are we ready?
Well, you could tell a little bit more of a story or something. Yeah, yeah, very, very short one. But yes, waiting for the finish here.
Okay. All right.
If you just want to do another one.
So Lauren.
It's ready. It's ready.
It's ready. All right.
I'm going to hit the button because it's ready finally, and I'm so sorry. Okay, here goes.
Always be a poet, even in prose. The devil's finest trick is to persuade you that he does not exist. the beautiful is always bizarre. Remembering is only a new form of suffering. Be always drunken. Nothing else matters. That is the only question. If you would not feel the horrible burden of time weighing on your shoulders and crushing you to the earth, be drunken continually. Drunken with what? With wine, with poetry, or with virtue, as you will, but be drunken. And if sometimes on the stairs of a palace, or on the green side of a ditch, or in the dreary solitude of your own room, you should awaken and the drunkenness be half or wholly slipped away from you, ask of the wind, or of the wave, or of the star, or of the bird, or of the clock, or of whatever flies, or sighs, or rocks, or sings, or speaks, ask what hour it is. And the wind, wave, star, bird, clock will answer you. It is the hour to be drunken.
Okay.
Thank you, Jean, and that was a beautiful, beautiful reading of Charles Baudelaire's. And inspired by that, we have Fantastic Sarcastic by Lauren Devon. And Lauren, why don't you go ahead, if you'd like, tell us a little bit of why you chose Baudelaire to be inspired by, and then read your poem for us.
Well, his epic work, The Flowers of Evil or Paris Spleen, is something that I've read off and on for most of my life. Never sat down and read the whole thing entirely, but bits and pieces, and gradually, over the decades, I've come to really view it as one of the ultimate poems of, I want to say, self-indulgence. But it really is, because he walked on the wild side. Really did, and was well known for his excesses, and was ostracized by his contemporaries for a while at a certain point. Later, his genius was recognized, but I just loved his loved his work. It struck a chord in me. At any rate, this is called Fantastic Sarcastic. As Baudelaire picked my pocket with his green and crested pen, his vastness reducing id to such small and slender mien. Can he claim birthright to the muse of muses, so piquant as the light of days in given evil flowering ways? Subconscious marking and evaluation of his deprivation, lacking astragalus and ginger, or hemp seed de rigueur, nonetheless, he doth express much to help my cognition's best. So, spleen is vented, facilitating intellectual digestion, easing two parallel abstractions which meet at the intersection of absurd, each ego ironical, deliberate, oft distorted of word. How well mated then are we, fed by the fantastic sarcastic, living in open-mouthed fury of each other's precious reality. Two dueling tongues that clash, yet always reassembling suit, differences woven into sheets instead for an infinitely varied and erotic bed. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Lauren. I'm really glad you brought this to the show. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I like this poem. I did, and I thought it was just well put together. And, you know, and the first time I heard it, I said it was a tad confusing to start with, but it smoothed over nicely. So I have to stick by those words. And I think that the last stanza kind of puts it out there that, you know, you take your differences and you kind of work them out in different ways. That's the way I see it, but what the hell do I know? Anyway, Laurent, it was a wonderful piece and well done.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, sorry. I do apologize. Sorry. I'm sort of coughing, so I'm so sorry. My voice is going a bit. I like this particular stanza. So spleen is vented, vacillating intellectual digestion, using two parallel abstractions, which meet at the intersection of absurd, ego, ironical, deliberate, oft distorted of word. I think that is just, I can only use the word beautiful because I really like it that much. It's so well done. I'm afraid that's all I can say at the moment because my foot's coming back. But beautifully done. And thank you so much for sharing that with us, Laurent. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comment, Kate. Yeah, I thought this was wonderful. The phrasing, the imagery, the metaphors are all quite brilliant. I like your word choices. I like how you pay tribute to Charles Baudelaire, his poetry, and the way his mind worked, and how he has throughout generations inspired the erotic side of so many poets. I really particularly like "So spleen is vented, facilitating intellectual digestion, easing two parallel abstractions with each at the intersection of absurd, each ego ironically deliberate, oft distorted of word. How well mated then are we, fed by the fantastic, sarcastic, living in open-mouthed fury of each other's precious reality." It brings about the sense of connection within the sarcasm and the absurd. So wonderful lines all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. And let's see what we have for our next classic poem. Our next classic poem is "As I Went A-Wandering" by Robert Burns. "As I Was A-Wandering" by Robert Burns. And we have an audio for that one.
Yes, we do. Let me hit that button. I'm so glad that I put these in order earlier. Here we go. Here we go.
"As I was wandering a midsummer e'en, the pipers and youngsters were making their game. Among them I spied my faithless false lover, which bled all the wounds o' my dooler again. Weel, since he has left me, may pleasure gae wi' him. I may be distressed, but I winna complain. I flatter my fancy I may get another. My heart it shall never be broken for ain. I could nae get sleeping till dawning for greeting. The tears trickled down like the hail and the rain. Had I nae got greeting, my heart would have broken. For all love's forsaken's a tormenting pain. Weel, since he had left me, may pleasure gae wi' him. I may be distressed, but I winna complain. I flatter my fancy I may get another. My heart it shall never be broken for ain. Although he had left me for greed o' the siller, I dinna envy him the gains he can win. I rather would bear o' the lade o' my sorrow than ever he acted sae faithless to him. Weel, since he has left me, may pleasure gae wi' him.
I may be distressed, but I wanna complain. I flatter my fancy, I may get another. My heart, it shall never be broken for ain.
Wonderful classic poem there, and a great read by our Weaver of Dreams. Sorry, I don't know what I was going to say there. Weaver of Jeans, I think I was like kind of combining two names together or something.
Call me anything you like.
I've been called worse.
Right. Too funny. Well, inspired by that poem, we have As I Wandered by Weaver of Dreams. And Kate, if you wish, go ahead, tell us a little bit about why you chose to be inspired by that particular poem or by Robert Burns, and give your poem a read for us. Are you on mute, Kate?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I do apologize. Whoa. Yes, as I was saying, I really couldn't have picked anybody else but Robbie. I love his work. Some of his poetry is absolutely wonderful, and some of his poetry is absolutely terrible. And it depends on how you feel as to how you feel about what he writes. But I love the fact that it's written in the Scottish dialect. I like it because it's just musical. To me, it's musical. Probably isn't to anybody else. Because you're trying to figure out what on earth I'm saying, which doesn't help. But yeah, so, and I like this one. Again, it was the story of somebody's heart being broken. It was about people getting hurt by love. So that's why I picked this one. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. I've got a SoundCloud, if you wouldn't.
You do.
Oh, that's my, right. My apologies.
No,
that's
it's okay.
Right. Completely forgot. Yes, we do. We have an audio for that.
I know where that one is. Okay, here we go.
On a wonderful summer evening, I took a stroll in the local park where a group of chaps kicked a football around. What a lark. When he left, he took my joy away from me. I won't complain because I know it set me free. Suddenly I spotted my ex-boyfriend among that motley diverse crew. All the fun memories I had came back to shatter this life anew. When he left, he took my joy away from me. I won't complain because I know it set me free. I spent the night wailing and lamenting. Come sunlight, I was still heartsick. But if I had not cried, my heart would have broken, tormented me.
Wonderful read and write there, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your voice, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Laurent, your thoughts.
I like the way this poem acknowledges the fact that if you hold grief within, it will break your heart. You have to give voice to the grief in order to let it go. I spent the night wailing and lamenting. Come sunlight, I was still heartsick. But if I had not cried, my heart would have broken, tormented me. It's a nice way to finish. And it's a nice way to acknowledge sorrow and grief without falling apart completely. Nice job.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I thought that this was a great take on the chosen prompt. You know, again, everybody's done such a great job with this. And I like the lyrical quality of this, you know, how it was written as, you know, with the chorus. And, you know, I could almost imagine it playing in my ear, you know. I just needed a tune, and then I'd have been all set. But I really thought it was well expressed and nicely done. So, Kate, you did a great job with this. It's a good piece, really, all the way through. And I laughed. If you didn't have the chorus, it would be an excellent brevity as well. So, yeah, either way, it's a win-win. So nicely
cool.
Done.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah, I really like the lyrical quality of this too. I like that you can see the inspiration from the original write, and yet it's in a very almost modern feel to your write, especially with the mention of kicking around a football and the use. I love the use of the word lark for the idea of, you know, somebody who's a fool or, you know, what such. And I liked the chorus in this. Very nice. When he left, he took my joy away from me. I won't complain because I know it set me free. And as Lawrence was mentioning, those end lines just really speak well on the whole idea of the grief process and, you know, crying being part of the healing. So wonderful, right, Kate? And very well done.
Thank you.
All right. So up next, let's see, what am I going to put up next? That is a good question. One would have thought I had been slightly more prepared, but all right. Up next, I'm going to put The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. And we have an audio for that, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Find that. I'm going to add a quarter here. Got it.
The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door. Only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently, my soul grew stronger. Hesitating then no longer, "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door." Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here, I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven. Ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast above the sculptured bust above his chamber door with such name as nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered. Still I scarcely more than muttered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow will he leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken. Doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast, and followed faster, until his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope, that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking evermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl, whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining, on the cushion's velvet violet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er she shall press? Nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee. By these angels he has sent thee respite, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the past above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the padded bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, and his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor, and my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted
nevermore. Always beautiful to hear The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe and in the great voice of Christopher Lee. Wonderful there. And the first poem we have inspired by that one is The Owl by Jati Premasaya. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
I will give it a whirl. The Owl. By Jati Premasaya, I believe. It was in a bleak summer night in a land deprived of light that I journeyed companionless I'm starting it over. That's it. The owl. It was a bleak summer night in a land deprived of light that I journeyed companionly, fleeing the society's wretchedness. The moon reigned sovereign, her sable robe covered the sky with a grin oblique and malign. She sat so pompous and high. In the dead silent hour from a lone dismal tower beneath the luminous altar, a doleful melody filled the air. What ghostly fingers wrought this sweet sorrow? What shade lingers in this ancient crumbling tower? Said I as I came to the edifice, driven by deadly weariness, hoping to find shelter under the roof of the tower. I passed through the gaping door and ascended to the top floor, while the elegiac serenade still ceaselessly played. My heart for a moment stopped, and I almost toppled on the floor as I stood aghast at the top of that gloomy centuried tower. For no fingers pressed the keys at the tower's peak, no fingers but talons in the beak. It was an owl with a grim and savage scowl, a devil owl from the earth's nethermost bowel.
Great read there, Jean, and wonderful, wonderful write by Jati. And Laurent, your thoughts? Is Laurent still with us?
Uh-huh. I think so.
Are you on mute, Laurent?
Yeah, I think we'll have to come back to him.
No problem. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's something about an owl that is, I mean, we know it's a wise creature. And so using the owl was inspired because you can put it into this, and it's wise, it's silent, it's everything we would expect an owl to be, but not quite as scary as a raven, which I think is, thank you very much, that was great. But it was beautifully written. I particularly liked, let me find it for a moment. Yes, the last two stanzas just gave you all, didn't it? My heart for a moment stopped and I almost toppled on the floor as I stood aghast at the top of that gloomy centuried tower. For no fingers pressed the keys at the tower's peak, no fingers but talons and a beak. It was an owl with a grim and savage scowl, a devil owl from the earth's nethermost bowel. So yes, it turned out to be just as scary as the raven, but very cleverly done and very well written. Yeah, and it took the whole idea of this creature, whatever it was, being there and quite scary. But yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, absolutely wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was, there were clever thoughts on Jati's part. I like how he took the idea of the raven and created a great story about an owl. He kind of just changed it over. You know, he didn't copy anything. He just made it his own and, you know, made the owl the center of attention. And I thought it was well done. It was clever, not near as long. I didn't say that. Which is okay, Jati. The raven's a little rough to listen to all the way through. But yeah,
absolutely.
Just really, really nicely put together. So well done, and thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have to agree. Now, this has wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that he went and was inspired by the raven but wrote about the owl in all its kind of wisdom and spookiness and the mythology that it represents. And just great lines all the way through, beautifully, beautifully written, and, just very well done. And Laurent, are you with us? All right, I'm going to take that.
What poem are we on?
The Owl by Jati.
Here's Nadia.
All right, let me read it, and I'll leave a comment.
Okay. All right. Thanks. All right. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and have us I'll have you go ahead and leave a written comment when you get a chance, Lauren, because I do have some more that to fit in. No problem.
Yeah.
But up next we have Inspired by the Raven, Bleak December by Flower Muse. And Lauren, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, certainly. Bleak December. In a land of long ago where Gothic structures did appear, villains of the status quo pranced freely through our Earth's sphere. Glad tidings were a foreign tongue among the hated glutton that walked the halls of darkened street, the nights amidst the travesty, where mayhem and the strangers lie racked to the walls of the chamber black, where torture filled the air and screams of torment sang out loud for the rest of the occupancies to hear. When the raven played his part, quoting in his heart of hearts a gibberish, nevermore, never, nevermore. And
great read there, Lauren, and an absolutely stunning write by Flower Muse. And I especially liked that second stanza with glad tidings were a foreign tongue among the hate and gluttony that walked the halls and darkened streets of nights amidst the travesty. Wonderful lines. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I thought this was a great take on the original, you know, very much more condensed, and I thought it had a nice flow to it. You know, in the land of long ago where Gothic structures did appear, villains of the status quo pranced freely through the Earth's sphere. The tidings were a foreign tongue among the hate and gluttony that walked the halls and darkened streets of nights amidst the travesty. I thought it was a great lead into the poem as well as, I just liked the rhyme scheme of it. I thought it was just nicely done. And it gave you that kind of that sense of darkness hovering, you know, and I thought that was pretty neat about it. Yep. And I had to have never morning, so I liked it. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Great comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this was very well written. I liked it. It was so condensed, but it got the whole of the story, the whole idea to us, you know, so it wasn't difficult to understand exactly what was going on here. I liked it a lot. But I did love particularly, glad tidings were a foreign tongue among the hate and gluttony that walked the halls and darkened street of nights amid the travesty. So yeah, there was no joy, there was no love, it was just hate, gluttony, and fear. And then we have the last stanza. And there's the raven again. There he is, where the raven played his part, quoting in his heart of heart, a gibberish, nevermore, nevermore, nevermore. Beautifully finished. I thought that was a wonderful ending to it as well, because it gave you the repetition, but very concisely, so you knew what was going. I liked it a lot, so thank you for sharing that with us. Flower Muse.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Lauren, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, this is a very interesting piece because the poet describes a land of long ago, inhabited by villains of the status quo, people who wanted to maintain things exactly the way they were. And there was not a lot of love and laughter in this particular place. As the poet says, glad tidings were a foreign tongue among the hate and gluttony. So, and a place where strangers were going to be in trouble. If you visited this place, you were going to end up on the rack, as, again, where mayhem and the strangers lie, racked to the walls of the chamber black, where torture filled the air. And in the last stanza, of course, now is where the raven comes in. And what does the author have him doing but quoting nevermore, never, nevermore, almost as in reflection of what he sees around him should never occur again, nevermore. A very interesting piece. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I was really glad to see Flower Muse was inspired. All right. Our next classic poem is Ode to Autumn by John Keats. And we have an audio for that.
Well, yes, we do. Here we go.
Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run, to bend with apples the mossed cottage trees, and fill all fruit with ripeness to the core, to swell the gourd, and plump the hazel shells with a sweet kernel, to set budding more and still more later flowers for the bees, until they think warm days will never cease, for summer has o'erbrimmed their clammy cells. Who hath not seen thee oft amid thy store? Sometimes whoever seeks abroad may find thee sitting careless on a granary floor, thy hair soft lifted by the winnowing wind, or on a half-reaped furrow sound asleep, drowsed with the fume of poppies, while thy hook spares the next swathe and all its twined flowers. And sometimes like a gleaner thou dost keep steady thy laden head across a brook, or by a cider press with patient look, thou watchest the last oozings hours by hours. Where are the songs of spring? Aye, where are they? Think not of them. Thou hast thy music too, while barred clouds bloom the soft dying day and touch the stubble plains with rosy hue. Then in a wailful choir the small gnats mourn among the river sallows, borne aloft or sinking as the light wind lives or dies, and full-grown lambs loud bleat from hilly bourn, hedge crickets sing, and now with treble soft the redbreast whistles from a garden croft, and gathering swallows twitter in the skies.
Wonderful classic poem there. And we have two different poems inspired by that particular piece, which will be our last two poems of the night. And the rest will be carried over to part two next week on Tuesday. Same time, same bat channel. So with that being said, I'm going to put up The Sweetest of All Seasons by Stelina, and we have an audio for that whenever you're ready, Jean.
And here we go.
Oh, how indolent sweet summer seems, with weariness of spent vitality, as she languishes in the fading light, her dying embers infusing the air with that unique scent of sultry decay. When autumn, waiting in the wings, brings lukewarm days, muted stars, and the amber harvest moon embedded in midnight blue. Her leonine locks flowing, wanders the earth, painting the landscape in vibrant hues of amber and gold. Droplets of summer's scarlet lifeblood upon copper leaves, crisply crackling neath her tread. the harvest fruit's succulent saft seeping, tingling our taste buds in tempting anticipation to taste the sweetest of all seasons, bursting with bountiful goodness. Beloved season, whose embrace of the earth sadly lingers for the briefest of times, a final swan song for nature, whose light dims as days grow weary. Though loath to leave the earth so soon, her dying breaths grow cooler and fainter with each chill of that interloper, winter, before he bids her a final frosty farewell, pulling up the snowy white coverlet o'er the land.
Wonderful read and write, Stelina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, your thoughts on Stelina's poem?
Yeah, first of all, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece on autumn, on seasons in general, if you will. And it's filled with great lines. And I don't think autumn is ever better described than in the lines, autumn, or leonine locks flowing, wanders the earth, painting the landscape in vibrant hues of amber and gold, droplets of summer's scarlet lifeblood upon copper leaves, crisply crackling neath our tread. Stelina knows what she's doing with a pen, and has demonstrated it to perfection here. Bravo.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, yes, beautifully written, as usual, and that music was wonderful, Stelina. I really enjoyed it very much. And the pictures are lovely, too. Look at that mist. Beautiful. Yes, I like the personification of autumn. Copper leaves crisply crackling neath our tread, the harvest fruit succulent saft seeping, tingling our taste buds in tempting anticipation. Taste the sweetness of all seasons, bursting with bountiful goodness. And that, yeah, that's it. That is the beauty of autumn. It's there. Everything comes together. Everything is vibrant and ripe and ready and perfect. So, yes, I really enjoyed this. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
No, I have to say, I thought this was such beautiful imagery in this piece, and I really enjoyed her personification of the season. Gorgeous take on the prompt, and it was just incredible. And such a wonderful read. I really loved it, Stelina, and thank you so much for sharing with us. Excellent work.
Absolutely. I have to agree with everyone. The personification of the seasons, especially autumn, you know, the sensuality within it, the imagery and metaphors, it was truly shows that autumn is the type of season that's a treat for all the senses. Wonderful, right, Stelina? And thank you for sharing that with us. All right. And our last poem for the night is Ode to Coffee by Rhyme. And it goes like this. Grandma's gummy chuckle, still so vivid as the coffee's soul spiraled mist its pour. She said my mother would be livid, but its cascade deafened my ears of eight, rebukes thwarted by the aroma bait, and its sating taste stuck like it was viscid. Punish me, mama, but I will endure. Quite possessive were those devilish sips, sugared for a sprout, a guiltful lure that ripens spendthrift junkies for caffeine, steadfast believers of the sacred bean whose morning ablutions preserve them pure. The dawning drug is one of communion that swarms my villa each weekend with laughs, which echoes a family reunion. Indeed, I cherish these coffee communes, yet nothing's calming as coffee afternoons when wax hues hover o'er the sunken sun. Aging taste buds now imbibe bitter black and tingle thinking of coffee cherries from Java beloved. Please bring me some back that I may cross them from my bucket list to lie blessed on my deathbed coffee kissed, to coil with its vapors as I rise from my smokestack. End poem. And I have to say, that was wonderful rhyme and flow, just a delightful ode to coffee. I definitely have a real appreciation and enjoyment for this rite all the way through. You know how I love my coffee and my caffeine. So, of course, I was going to assign this to myself. It's great because, you know, there's humor to it, especially the whole idea of getting in a bit of trouble with grandma, getting those sips of coffee from grandma, knowing full well that you'll take the punishment if it comes. And it's also wonderfully nostalgic. So very cool. Very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, I'm not on mute. That's good. Oh, yes. I thought it was very well done. I really did. I love Grandma's gummy chuckle still so vivid as the coffee soul spiraled midst its pour. Yes, there's something about coffee, isn't there, that is just... It's another one of these amazing things that always smell just that tiny bit better than they taste. I don't understand it myself. I don't know whether you expect a lot more, but I've always found that. Same thing for me with cucumber, oddly enough. But if you put enough cream and sugar in that little mother, it's going to be delish. So, aging taste buds now imbibe bitter black and tingle. Thinking of coffee cherries, yeah, you do have to get a little bit more of a bite to appreciate these things. But I did. I enjoyed it very much. So thank you, Vic. Thank you very much for sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I was glad Ryan shared this with us. And great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
All right.
All right, well,
Yes. I love this. I thought it was so funny. And ironically, if you weren't going to read this, I was going to tell you needed to read it. Because it's right up your alley, Pam.
It
was a clever take on the prompt. It was nicely penned, and I enjoyed it. I wrote it was an excellent piece. I started out, the dawning drug is one of communion. It swarms my villa each weekend with laughs. It echoes my family reunion. Indeed, I cherish these coffee communes, yet nothing is calming as coffee afternoons when wax cues hover over the sunken sun. You know, I don't know. I just thought it was great. I really did. So clever take on that prompt. I mean, really, you know, you read the prompt and you make it your own, you know. Gives you that idea, that inspiration. You know, you just fill in the blanks with your words. Pretty clever.
Yeah. Absolutely. This has been a wonderful show tonight. Thank you, Jean and Kate, as always, for being my twisted sisters. Thank you, Laurent, for calling in and joining us. Thank you to Stelina and Bill for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Part two will be next week. You can join us at 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time tonight, Wednesday, for Art of Seduction with Fill My Eyes. And, of course, keep an eye out on all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late night poet hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And Jean, anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, just a great show, Pam. Excellent poetry, everyone. Great comments. Thank you guys for hanging with us, Laurent and Kate. And, you know, Pam, you did a fine job with that contest. Well done. Thank you, Selena. Thank you, Bill. It's good to have you on the board. Absolutely. It was fun. Good show.
Good night, everybody.